And welcome back to Coast, Michael Cremo with us this hour. We will take phone calls as we talk about these incredible discoveries and his work as the forbidden archaeologist, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Michael Cremo with us. We'll take your calls as we talk about his work as the forbidden archaeologist. Michael, do you stand alone in this field, or there are others like you who would back you?
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up. Yeah, there are a few researchers in the mainstream science field who have been influenced by my work, and I'll mention one of them. You know, a few years ago, I was invited to speak at the geology department of the University of Oklahoma at Norman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a professor of geology there, David Deming.
Good school, too.
And, you know, I was pretty amazed that a professor of geology at this geology department of this big university was inviting me to speak to the professors and graduate students of geology there. So I asked them, how did you learn about my work? And he said, well, I heard you on Coast to Coast.
There you go.
You'd be surprised who's listening, George.
As a matter of fact, I got to tell you this story because Tom sent me a text. Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top is listening to you right now. he loves the show, and he's all excited about you. So
I
a little shout out to
Top.
Him. Isn't that cool? I'm gonna have you grow a beard like Billy Gibbons and Dusty.
Yeah. So
take you about 100 years.
So when I went to the University of Oklahoma at Norman and I talked to the geology department there, I mentioned a case from Oklahoma. It was the Holloman quarry discoveries from the 1920s. You had some projectile points that, or, you know, like arrowheads, stone arrowheads that were found very deep in this quarry in layers of rock about 2 million years old. So David Deming heard about this, and we talked about it, and he decided to investigate the case. So he went out. You know, he located the old Holloman quarry. He went out, he visited it, he looked into it, and he became pretty much convinced. And I think it got him into a little bit of trouble with some of his colleagues, but that often happens.
Well, it does. Well, it's happened to you before too, hasn't it?
Well, absolutely. You know, I call my topic forbidden archaeology because sometimes I get forbidden. My books have been published in a lot of different languages. One of them is Russian. So once I was on a lecture tour of Russia, I was speaking at universities all over the country. But at one university, you know, a lecture had been scheduled for me. But some professors at this university decided to protest to the president of the university, and he canceled the lecture. So the professors who invited me went to the local branch of the Russian Academy of Sciences, and the director of the Russian Academy of Science branch in that city said, well, if they won't let Michael Cremo speak at the university, he can speak here. So they had buses bring students and professors from the university to the Russian Academy of Science building. And the professors who invited me said, more people came than would have come if the lecture had been held at the university, because everybody wanted to know, what is this man going to say that's so dangerous that his lecture was canceled and he was forbidden to speak at the university? So yeah, if I didn't get forbidden from time to time, I'd have to change the name of my topic.
Wasn't that a tragedy about the Notre Dame Cathedral today? Oh, God.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been there a few times, and it just goes to show you, because sometimes, people ask about, well, what would happen to the remains of our civilization? And, sometimes we think our monuments are pretty solid. You kind of look at that Notre Dame Cathedral, like with its stone structure, and you think that's pretty solid. But, as we saw, there's wood in there.
That's right. 800 years old.
It can catch fire, and the whole thing could have come down. I mean, fortunately, it appears they were able to stop the fire before the whole thing came
Yeah, they
crashing
may be
down.
able to replenish it again and put it back together, but who knows?
But that just shows you what can happen, over the course of a few hundred or a few thousand years, that all this stuff that we think is so solid is really, really pretty fragile. I mean, unless we're talking like something like the pyramids,
That's right. That's
yeah,
right.
that now
That's all stone.
those were built to last.
Today, there was a story that might corroborate the biblical version of Moses leading his people out of Egypt with the Exodus. That could be an amazing story. And I love it when science, Michael, finally catches up to historical biblical events. I wish we could find Noah's Ark one day.
Well, somebody just sent me a picture of something that looks like an ark from northern Iraq.
That's interesting. Anyways, let's take some calls for you. We'll go to Dave in Ottawa in Canada to get things started. David, go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you so much for taking my call, George.
Sure thing, Dave.
I'm just fascinated by the topic, and Mr. Cremo sounds so eloquent in what he's talking about, especially the whole concept of, was it evolution of mankind, or did we exist in various forms side by side through various points of history? Then what happened with the comets that Pratt nearly destroyed the planets, wiped out the dinosaurs and stuff? By the sound of the time frame that Michael is talking about, our ancestors would have witnessed that, and probably maybe a little short step in evolution, or a little step behind them, moving on again to where we are today. But the other thing is to bring it to more modern. If we're looking at side-by-side living in various sorts of iterations of our species, where would you put Sasquatch in that? Is that an iteration of us living side by side with us? And I'll take your reactions to these off the phone.
All right, go ahead, Michael.
Okay,
Start with a
those
few.
are really great points. In my book, Forbidden Archaeology, I have a whole chapter on evidence for living ape men. So the basic idea is just as in the past, our human species has coexisted with other human-like species and various kinds of primitive apes and monkeys on this planet. So even today, our human species may be coexisting with other human-like or ape-like creatures in various parts of the world that go under the name of Sasquatch, Bigfoot, Yeti, the Almas, and other creatures of that sort. So, yes, I agree with the caller that it's not only that our human species was coexisting with various kinds of human-like ape men in the past, it's still going on today, it appears, from this kind of evidence that the caller was talking about. And I also agree with the caller that our human species has been around for a long, long time, and has gone through several devastations. He mentioned the one that wiped out the dinosaurs. But I think a human presence goes all the way back to the very beginning of the universe, because I think we exist in a consciousness-based universe that was designed to give us various types of conscious experience to help us understand what our true nature really is. So lots of interesting points raised by the caller.
Michael, do you think we might have been seeded on this planet by extraterrestrials, as some believe?
Absolutely. And that depends upon understanding what our real identity is. I think our real identity is that we are conscious individual beings who are situated in bodies like drivers are situated in cars. So I think the conscious self is independent from the physical body, whether it's a human body or a fish body or a bird body or a plant body or an insect body. The conscious self is simply a passenger in the vehicle of the body. And that conscious self is extraterrestrial in origin. So in that sense, we're all extraterrestrials. And yes, we were seeded onto this planet by higher extraterrestrial beings who had the ability to do that. And the existence of these higher intelligent extraterrestrial beings is the reason why we can survive the periodic catastrophes that wipe out life on this terrestrial level of reality, because the resources are there at the higher levels of the cosmos to repopulate the Earth and reboot the system after these periodic devastations that take place.
Let's go to Joe in Alabama, Michael. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me on.
Very welcome. Thank you for calling.
This is the first time I've ever talked to you.
Perfect. I trust you've listened before, though, right?
Oh, I've been listening forever.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. My quick question is, if we evolved from apes, why are there still apes? And
that's a great question, Michael.
Well, I'd say, Joe, I don't think we evolved from apes, except in a very, very special sense.
Okay, you don't believe in the Darwinian theory, do you, Michael?
No, I don't accept the Darwinian theory. I think Darwin had a lot of interesting ideas, but his main mistake is not understanding that the conscious self is different from the body. So there's a kind of evolution that takes place, an evolution of consciousness from one lifetime to another in the process of reincarnation. So that in one lifetime, the conscious self may be in the body of an ape or monkey. In the next lifetime, it may be in the body of some kind of ape man, like Homo erectus or Homo luzonensis or something. And then in its next lifetime, it may be in an anatomically modern human body. So the bodies, the different bodily types, are all available.
We've got
just that the conscious self, lifetime after lifetime, evolves through them. It's not that the bodies are evolving one from the other. It's the conscious self that moves from one body to another and gradually becomes more and more aware, more and more capable of acting on its desires.
We've got Wayne in Tacoma, Washington. Wayne, go ahead, sir.
Good evening, gentlemen, Sir George and Michael. A couple things. First of all, George, Noah's Ark is alive and well and found by Ferdinand Navarra and Son on a 16-millimeter documentary that they did in 1955.
Some say that.
Right, yeah. And, you know, I look all over the net for it now and I can't find it, but I actually saw it on TV less than 20 years ago, and it was quite amazing. He actually went in the Ark. It showed him bringing out a piece about 4 foot long and about a foot square, and they carbon dated it back to about 6,000 years ago. I'm not quite that old, but 4,000 or 5,000 years anyway. And my other question is about wood also and the process of fossilization. Now, we know for a fact that in May of 1980, Mount St. Helens exploded and put about 150 square miles of the forest, a lot of it went into Lake St. Helens up there on Mount St. Helens. They believe over or close to 20,000 trees that they found. A few years later, they did a scan from the top of Mount St. Helens, and they found about 20,000 of them upright. And they claim that there were actually millions of them all around the lake in that area there. Now, many of these trees were less than 20 years old. And 2 years later, in August of 82, I guess just a hair more than 2 years old, investigators found and they carbon dated a lot of these trees that were petrified. And they dated between 100 and 36,000 years old. Now, remember, these trees are only 20 years old. So we know carbon dating can be way, way off. Michael, what's your response to that?
I think you're right that carbon dating can be off. I mean, what I tend to think is, I have, my reasons for thinking we live in an old universe. I mean, I know some people think that we live in a universe or a planet that was created 10,000 years or less ago. I would just say, however old we think the Earth is, humans have been around since the beginning, whether it's a few thousand or a few billion years ago. But as far as the carbon dating goes, yes, it can be wrong. Samples can be contaminated with recent carbon-14, and they can give young ages younger than it should be, or it can become samples can become contaminated with older carbon and give older dates than it should be. So that is a problem with these radiometric forms of dating.
Michael, we're going to come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take some final phone calls. Michael's websites, many of them are tied into the title of his book, but his easiest website is mcremo.com, mcremo.com, which we have linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. And we started talking to Michael back way back when we started on Coast to Coast, and he has been one heck of a guest. More of his calls with you when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Michael Cremo with us. Paul Eno joins us next hour as we talk about the other side and strange things there. Michael, since you've been doing this, I've gotten more response, more emails to what you've done, your research. Really, you need to be and ought to be congratulated for what you do, sir.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Let's go back to some more calls. We go to Walt in Pennsylvania. I'm going to start calling you Walter the Skeptic, but go ahead.
Hi, George. Needless to say, it's always great to be on with you, George.
Thank you, sir.
George, Dr. Cremo, you're a great conversationalist. You're very knowledgeable, but you threw me a little when you said that You didn't believe in classic Darwinism that we evolved from the apes. Now, I have told George, discussed it previously with George, that I think it's obviously that evolution is not static. I think that we are still evolving. And I think you can say that we are living fossils, so to speak. Now, I've told George that I think that my, if you want to call it my, Walt's theory is that just as there are multiple species of hairy ape, we have the chimpanzees, the gorillas, the gibbons, the orangutans. It doesn't make sense to me that 8 billion human beings on this planet could all be of one species. Why should it be any different for the human species, the veritable naked ape? Now, George, I don't want to be in discussing these things. I don't want people to think that I'm any sort of bigot or a supremacist. But George, I think that we can't let PC influence science, you know, and the study of where we came from, anthropology. George, as I said to you, let's say if we look at Europeans, and let's say we look at Europeans, Caucasians were light-skinned now, but so are the Asians. The Asians and the Europeans both have light skin, but obviously we can easily tell each other apart. Our the shape of our eyes are different.
Sure, absolutely. But I think environment and climate has a lot to do with the complexity of the human races. Michael, what do you think of the fact that, you know, we've got Caucasians, we've got African Americans, we've got Africans, we've got Asians, we've got different species of human beings? Do you think it's because of where they were geographically?
Not necessarily. You know, we notice that all the different kinds of human beings can interbreed with each other, which is one definition of how you would define a species. But, you know, for me, the really important thing to understand is that the conscious self, the soul, is different from the body. Whether it's a European body or an African body or a Chinese body, you know, the conscious self is different than, you know, the body, mm-hmm. with its superficial differences of color and hairstyle and so on. And
well, and Walter's thoughts
so
about the...
We're all equal. We're all equal on the level of consciousness.
But Walter's thoughts about humans are all different species does not present the fact that Darwin was correct.
Yeah, I mean, there can be all kinds of variants. You know, like you take dogs. They're all different kinds of dogs. Cats. They're all different kinds of cats, but they're all cats.
Birds.
Yeah, well, birds is little different, I think. There, I think you do have different species.
Yeah, but they all have beaks and eyes and claws.
Yeah. I think you're right in that sense, that there are different body plans that have... You know, the real question, I think, for Darwinism is not to explain minor variations in size and shape and color, but how do you get eyes when there were no eyes? How do you get wings when there were no wings? How do you get consciousness from chemicals? I think those are the big problems with the Darwinian theory of evolution.
All right, let's go check out Dave in Long Island, New York. David, go ahead, sir.
Hi, George. Hi, Mr. Cremo. I'm a big fan of yours, and I'm an independent researcher, and I focus on the sort of stone constructions in New England area and New York and basically the northeastern United States. but I also specialize in sort of phenotype and morphology of native peoples across the North America, really. And we know about the Paracas peoples down in Peru, but I think a lot of people don't know that we have our own version of that in the Americas here. I'm sure you're familiar with the work of Wetherill at Snaketown, Arizona, where he found the Dolichocephalus naturally occurring long skulls, and also Brachiocephalus, the artificial cranial deformation going on down there. That was Wetherill that Edwin S. Gladwin picked up, who was the curator of the Archaeological Museum of Arizona. And then also Frank C. Hibbins' work on Sandia Man and Sandia Cave in New Mexico, and also more than that, Galena Canyon, which was also Frank C. Hibbins' work that we don't hear anything about at all. And all of these people have a different kind of phenotype, a different kind of morphology. And I believe from my research that the people from Lovelock Cave and the people from Galena Canyon and even the Hoving Weep in Utah and Colorado there was actually the same peoples there. They are misattributing it to Pueblo peoples. But the people at Lovelock Cave were the exact same people with this different morphology. The museum there says that they were robust, you know, more robust, which is a euphemism for much larger. And of course, I think also, too, from my research, that some native peoples are actually a hybrid of this large hominid, large humanoid. And up here in the Northeast, we have the research of Jim Vieira, guys like Hugh Newman, Jim Vieira, where you have these double row teeth, large hominids, large humanoids. And, you know, don't forget we had the reports of Davaca from the failed Spanish Narvaez expedition, where he went through the interior. He saw like small prehistoric type men, and, you know, his quote was, "If they were not large, our fears made giants of them." But that's just some of my own research. But it's just interesting what you said, that in lieu of the latest find in the Philippines there, of all these people of different morphology, different phenotype.
Well, David, you know your business. Michael, he's pretty astute.
Yeah, he's pretty well informed about his topic. And I would just ask him, does he think that a lot of that variation in the different phenotypes of the human populations in the Americas is due to perhaps transatlantic and trans-Pacific contacts with people of different civilizations?
I'd say that there was definitely that, and maybe more, you know, in a historical time, certainly, I think. But I think there's precursors to that because, I mean, you know, without trying to go so deep into it, I think there was a transition between the Pleistocene and the Holocene, not only for many, many animal species on the planet, but I think for the hominid species as well. And, you know, what maybe J.R.R. Tolkien was talking about is not really fiction and maybe more likely.
Maybe. What if, Michael, we are offspring of E.T.'s, all different races? Possible?
Well, again, I keep going back to this basic point that the conscious self is different from the body. And the conscious self isn't from the world of matter. So in that sense, we're all extraterrestrials. But in terms of our bodies, I think there are 400,000 human-like species scattered throughout the entire universe. And some of them are present on this planet now. Some were present on this planet in the past. And there have been contacts between different types of terrestrial and extraterrestrial beings. And yes, there have been hybrids. like if we go to the ancient Sanskrit writings of India, like to the Bhagavad Gita, for example, the hero of the Bhagavad Gita is Arjuna. And according to the text, his father was an extraterrestrial being, and his mother was a terrestrial female.
Well,
so
there you go.
Yeah, you've, like they speak in India of the solar dynasty and the lunar dynasty of kings, indicating that the ancestors of these different dynasties had extraterrestrial origins. So, yes, George, I think terrestrial celestial hybrids is a possibility.
Let's go next to Glenn in Texas. Welcome to the program. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Great, sir. Thank you.
Okay, relax. I like Michael.
I do, too.
Mr. Cremo, I saw an episode of Arthur C. Clarke's Mysterious World in the late 80s, I believe. And he was talking about ancient civilizations, and they showed an area in the Upper Congo Basin that 15,000 years ago or so wouldn't have been in the wet belt. It would have been further north, and it was an area was covered everywhere you looked, as far as you can see, with a very sophisticated pottery, almost porcelain-like in the glazing. And they also showed an area in the Upper Amazonian Basin, where it's in the midst of a flooded rainforest, where an aerial photo showed clear evidence of habitation on large scale. Are you familiar with any of those?
Not specifically. I know there are a lot of researchers who use Google Earth to kind of detect architectural remains of ancient civilizations in the forested and other wilderness areas of the world, and even under the sea.
Let's go to David in New Mexico. Welcome to the show. Hi, David.
Hi, gentlemen. I'm ringing the phone for 10, 15 minutes, so I missed some conversation. I called when the question was posed, if we descended or evolved from apes, why are there still apes? And then we went on to pose the further question that Darwin may not have answered about how do you get wings from when there were no wings? And so I'd like to take a shot at answering those two questions.
Okay.
They're kind of one and the same.
Let's do it in about a minute or so, though, Dave. We're almost out of time. Go ahead.
I guess the easiest analogy is if we agree that we, in the beginning of canines, we had wolves, coyotes, dingoes, that kind of thing, and now we have every different breed under the sun, it's because you take a small population, 20, 30, 100 individuals from a population of whatever there was, 10,000, 100,000, and they go off on their own and have their own little community for 20 generations, 30 generations, 100, 1,000 generations, and you come out with, you know, a Shih Tzu or a Lhasa Apso or a German Shepherd or whatever that look nothing like the original, or not much like the original wolf. And that yet you still have wolves. You didn't lose all of your wolves because you now have a Pomeranian. You see what I mean?
Yeah. Interesting point, Michael.
No, that's valid.
Michael, we are almost out of time, but I do want to check in with you in terms of any more trips coming up for you.
Yes, some of them are focused on the specific research that I'm doing for the Temple of Vedic Planetarium.
Good.
So they're not public events. In terms of public events, in September, I'm scheduled to speak at an organization organization called ICRL, International Consciousness Research Laboratories, in Princeton, New Jersey. And this was originally set up by Dr. Robert John and Brenda Dunn, his co-worker.
Should be exciting. Michael Cremo, thank you again for being on the program as we talk about this latest discovery in a cave in the Philippines. Up next, Paul Eno joins me as we talk about the supernatural.